So hello and welcome to Chain Reactions, the Chain Business Insights podcast. I'm your host, Ken Cottrell. In today's podcast, our guest is Richard Ettel, co-founder and CEO of SkyCell AG, a Swiss-based company that specializes in transporting temperature-sensitive goods in the pharmaceutical industry. Richard, welcome to the Chain Reactions podcast.
Yeah, thank you, Ken, for having me.
So, Richard, tell us a bit about your background and how you got into the cold chain business.
Well, I'm an entrepreneur. I stumbled into this segment by chance. We originally designed an insulation technology for buildings. And when we pitched it for a building in Novartis, of Novartis, here in Switzerland, they asked us, well, could you do a container? Because they're having issues with shipping high-value temperature-sensitive goods to the Middle East. And so we investigated and saw that this is quite an interesting niche, and this became SkyCell.
Huh, interesting. So,
it was by chance.
By chance, okay. So the World Health Organization estimates that some 40% of vaccines are compromised because of a broken cold chain, and the temperature of medicines in transit can vary by as much as 8 degrees from accepted tolerances. SkyCell has developed a delivery system to mend this broken cold chain. Can you describe it for us?
Sure. So it's the combination of two things. One is this insulation technology that we designed. It reflects heat radiation. So when we sit on the tarmac, for example, in Dubai, 96% of heat radiation, so sun rays, are reflected, so they don't enter the container. So we only have to worry about 4%, so sort of, as a rough understanding. The other aspect was we developed a new cooling technology. So the market leader today is like a flying fridge operating on a battery that drives a compressor, warm and cold air, that works up to a certain ambient temperature. We, however, do not operate a compressor. We develop chemicals which are in the walls, and they melt at the specific temperature that should guard the pharmaceutical products. So they don't touch the pharmaceutical products, they're built into the walls. So because we do it directly, we store about 5 times more energy than you would have in these active containers, and hence superior performance in length. So we store about 160 hours of performance, whereas the current market leader stores about 32 hours. And we also operate under more extreme circumstances. So the hottest live shipment we've had to date was with an ambient temperature of 70 degrees Celsius. That's really hot. You can boil an egg on top of the container. Hmm. And inside, it was still 2 to 8 degrees Celsius, just to give you an idea on the performance. The other nice side effect of this is the efficiency. It's superior in weight and also in volume. So when you're smaller and lighter in air freight, you save money and CO2.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And what about the sort of geographic scope of the service, Richard, in terms of where you pick up, where you deliver, et cetera?
So we started as a typical niche strategy. So we started out with shipping mostly from Europe to emerging markets. And so we shipped anything from into African markets. Also then more into, over time we developed. So we did more and more mature markets, shipping them to Brazil. And today we ship globally to more than 81 countries. And we count some of the largest pharma companies in the world as our customers. So it's an exciting journey.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Now, one important component of that system is blockchain technology. Can you tell us a bit more about how you use that technology to make the drugs cold chain more efficient?
Yeah. So we outfitted our containers with sensors. Originally, just to monitor our processes in the warehouses, because we subcontract the sort of the handling, the preconditioning, sort of the charging of the container, we subcontract that. And because it's nice to trust, but it's better to double check and control, we install these sensors to know what's going on, for example, in our warehouse in Brazil. And thus, we could control the quality of our work and know that we only deliver containers to our customers that are fully operational. Now, these sensors, they record the ambient temperature and also the inside temperature, humidity, we know the location, etc. And I think today we operate the largest fleet of Internet of Things containers in air freight. So we have about 1,000 something containers today in the fleet. We're growing it to 2,000 this year. And all of them have these sensors that record various parameters and are then fed over the cloud to our servers, and which are then stored in blockchain. Now, this is not a decentralized system yet, but this will move to a decentralized system. Our first step, or maybe if I take a step back, so what's our vision? Our vision would be to have sort of the container 4.0, which administers itself. Because the container knows through sensors that it's being loaded. It knows through a smart contract who rents it, and it knows when it's unloaded, so it can terminate the contract and start the settlement of the invoice. This is not yet super important for us because, you know, 1,000 containers or so you can still manage by hand. Even 10,000 containers, I think you can manage by hand. But if you go into the dimension of 10 million units when you go direct to patient, then you need a highly automated and trustworthy system like the blockchain.
Right. Very interesting. So you mentioned, I think, that, correct me if I'm wrong, it's not a decentralized system yet as such. Can you maybe just talk a little bit more about, just to clarify that?
Yeah. So today we store in blocks. So here the important part is that the data cannot be falsified. That's why we store it in blocks on our central servers today in a database. Our next step, so we are constantly improving that, and we're just raising a lot of capital also so we can decentralize that to realize our vision. So the first step now is that we can take crypto payments. So we are, I think, the first container company in air freight to accept Bitcoin and Ether to settle invoices. The second step will be to install smart contracts for the various container types. And then the last step is that all the containers are, in essence, managing themselves, or they need almost no overhead.
Right. How far away do you think are you from that third step?
Oh, the third step. This is like the autonomous driving car.
Yeah.
I think it will take us 2 to 3 years to get there.
Right.
It took us half a year to get to payments. I think it will take us 1.5 years to get to smart contracts, that it's really operational on a global level. We will go into sort of a beta trial for certain customers later this year. We have now first airlines that are interested to use this. So it's not just us. We want to build an ecosystem of other players that want to use and administer their assets. So I think airlines have a lot of assets, so they are prime candidates, and we have good relationships with prime airlines. So I think we can bring them into this ecosystem.
That's really interesting. You mentioned that the security is obviously a key benefit of the blockchain system. I'm thinking as that evolves and as you've described it, you'll also gain other benefits, one of them being, of course, you know, communications, that you're going to be able to disseminate information to a fairly dispersed community of users. I assume that's also on your map too.
Yeah. So the ground vision would be sort of to establish a logic chain. So that's the code name of this logistics blockchain. It's sort of the red line in logistics. So for shipment, Kühne-Nagel estimates that up to 200 pieces of communication, these are documents, emails, phone calls, are required to make a shipment, of whether it's ocean freight or air freight, happen. So this is from end to end. Wow. Now, if all of this were attached to one string, if some information is public, sort of the weight of the container, storage conditions, threat levels, or if it's a dangerous goods, etc., that should be public information. Other information should be through maybe a permissible blockchain, be private, that only the right people should have access to it. So here, for example, Corda or similar systems are prime candidates, where you can set the sensitivity level and say, for example, customs should be able to see the value and the customs declaration documents, whereas not everybody in the supply chain should be able to see those documents. So I think that's the potential of blockchain, to make these, define the different roles that the individuals in the supply chain can have and what kind of information they have access to.
Yes, yes. So there is a lot of talk at the moment, isn't there, about, you know, hybrid blockchain systems where we're using both permissioned and permissionless technology, and you see that perhaps as a way that we can harness the full benefits of blockchain.
Yeah, I mean, we are not a protocol developer. We rely on the excellent protocol options that are out there today. We are evaluating multiple options, to be honest. We have not decided which one to go with. There are great concepts like Hyperledger or Corda as examples. Some of them have different developing communities, so I think it's also a decision which is the best community for us to get involved.
Yes.
So there's a lot of brain power going into developing these protocols, and it's like us using then Windows or Mac to making the choice what's the best operating system, and we build the applications on these operating systems.
Okay. And what about cost, Richard? How do you think that this technology, blockchain in particular, might bring down the cost of the cold chain?
This is the reason why we started already with accepting payments. When we rent out a container to, for example, Indian customers, we see up to $150 banking charges throughout the supply chain when we invoice our container. So when we send an invoice for $3,000 or $4,000, up to $150 disappear just in the banking void.
Yeah.
Now, you may consider blockchain or Bitcoin an expensive blockchain, but it's still cheaper than $150. And I see the money in 10 minutes, whereas in the traditional banking system, it can be up to 2 weeks. So it's speed, and the cost of transaction is going down significantly. So, for example, with Ethereum, it's even cheaper. If we pay if you get paid in Ether, it's actually significantly less expensive than Bitcoin.
Interesting.
And that's a use case we already have today.
So clearly, the economics are going to improve even more as these systems develop.
Yeah, I think in pharma, this is a niche because it's we earn good margins. So this is really to train ourselves to be able to administer smaller packaging. So today we rent out air freight containers, so they're quite big. But if we go direct to patient and we want to invoice at a small parcel level, we need to be as economical as possible. And I think the blockchain is a very good solution for that.
Okay. So getting back a bit to the sort of general impact of your system, tighter government regulations such as the drug serialization program that's being introduced in the U.S. Require the farm industry to develop more precise track and trace capabilities. I'm just wondering how you think that advanced, you know, tracking systems such as yours can help the industry to meet these types of requirements.
We don't do an overall encompassing track and trace. So what we can contribute is the temperature. We can show the temperature, humidity surrounding these goods as long as the goods were in our container. So this is what we can contribute. And through the blockchain, we can prove that this data was not falsified. I think this is an important contribution, but I think serialization goes a lot further. And I think there will be other solutions out there that are doing the full from birth of the raw material going into the API becoming the semi-finished product, the product being packaged until it's shipped in our containers to the distributor, and then from the distributor. So it's a very long chain, and I think there will be other solutions, and we just feed our data into these solutions.
Yes,
at this
understand.
Stage.
Right. Now, your ultimate goal is to eliminate temperature excursions entirely from the drug cold chain. How close are you to realizing that goal?
So this is actually, I think, our biggest contribution today. This is the reason why we exist. The industry today has about 8.5% temperature excursions. This means out of 100 shipments, 8.5, they register some temperature different from what it should be. So, and this leads in many cases to product loss. For example, we have a customer shipping out of Ireland to Saudi who loses more than 15% of his shipments a year because of temperature, and we are bringing that down to less than 0.1%. So we're not at zero, but we are at 0.1%. So last year, our overall performance of the company was less than 0.1%. I think this is why we exist. This is why customers love us and switch over to our solution. And I think this is what also investors like, because this is a long-term interesting story.
Yes, absolutely. And I can imagine the technology could be applicable in other areas. I'm just wondering whether you think that the SkyCell system could be applied in other cold chains. Food comes to mind because there's so much activity right now going on in the food industry to try and improve supply chain transparency generally. Do you think that your system could be applied in those industries?
Definitely. So we get requests for food all the time. So SkyCell has a sister company as of a couple of weeks ago called Food Guardians. And Food Guardians will tackle that opportunity. Obviously, food is a lot more volume but more cost pressure driven. So there we have to figure out a good way to work with partners so that we can keep the cost as low as possible. But the loss in the supply chain in food is significant. So I think this is what we can contribute again here, is reduce the loss of product and ideally also improve the freshness. So this is actually our slogan. Imagine that your tomatoes taste one day fresher.
Yeah.
So that's the ultimate goal. And so to make it more affordable and it tastes better.
Okay. Now, presumably, would you have to develop other types of containers to accommodate the food shipments as such?
I think the sizes will be different. And also the performance in terms of long, in the runtime is not the same as in pharma. As an example, pharma can sit at customs for days and sometimes weeks. Most food is rotten after a couple of days. So I think the speed in food means that the containers need to perform less long, but under the same extreme circumstances. I think that's their share. By making the container having to perform less long, they will be lighter, thus more affordable. So that's definitely one. But I think the more interesting part, instead of shipping bulk food around the world, is this trend shipping directly to the consumer's home. And this is where we see the strongest potential, that we design sort of, I call it internally, the Amazon box, something that a company like Amazon would ship to your home, or another regional distributor or supermarket chain has these that ship overnight to your home, and then you're not there in the morning, but the goods are still remain chilled until you arrive at home in the evening. You take the box in, and either you empty it or you wait until the next day for your grill, and then you throw the steaks on the grill.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's interesting, because I know that there's a lot of work going on at the moment in the food service industry, for example, to figure out how they can meet the increasing demand for fresh foods, which puts a lot of pressure on the supply chain, of course. And one of the big issues is safety, and this could certainly be a solution to some of those problems.
Yeah, let me give you an example. So I think food is even more cost sensitive than pharma by far. So it has to be very affordable. What's an example of affordable? So today, mostly the most common solution is called styrofoam boxes. So it's a box with dry ice or with gel packs, which are frozen. And these boxes are quite heavy, so in the sense of volume. And again, in freight, you pay volumes and weight. So if you can make the box smaller because the wall thickness is thinner because of our technology, you're paying less. The other aspect is these styrofoam boxes, they are one-way systems in 90% of the cases. And in our case, we're doing a multi-way solution. Now, the multi-way solution is so affordable that it costs less than $1 per day to use. And then you obviously have enough budget to do the reverse logistics, for example, with an integrator like FedEx.
Right. And, of course, there's
so
an environmental...
a better solution, cheaper.
Right. And I was just going to say that there's an environmental angle as well, isn't there, in that the styrofoam containers are certainly not as environmentally friendly as the types of containers that you're using.
That's correct. That's part of our DNA. If you go through our website, you will always find that the CO2 footprint is very important for us. When we also design the container, they are made of 100% recyclable materials, because in the end, in logistics, stuff breaks, so we need to make it in such a way that we can recycle it at the end of life. And the second component is the weight. If you bring down the weight and the volume, you further reduce the CO2 f- footprint in logistics. That's these two components.
Yes, interesting. Well, before I let you go, Richard, I'd like to get some general feedback from you on sort of blockchain. Now, as a company, you've gained a lot of experience in blockchain and IoT technology. Have you any advice to offer shippers that want to harness the technology, particularly in relation to supply chain visibility and transparency? There's a lot of work going on in that area at the moment. And you've clearly gained a lot of experience in this area. So any advice for shippers who are looking at the technology right now?
So I think the first one would be don't do something on your own. I would look for an ecosystem to join. I'm not saying that because we build up an ecosystem, because it's just easier to share with similar interested parties to share such an ecosystem and also to benefit on the development costs on these ecosystems. So we see, for example, many of sea freight companies, they're optimizing themselves. But ideally, we're optimizing logistics as a whole. So here, I think it would be joining the right ecosystem and I think also setting more of a long-term goal, starting out where do we want to see ourselves in 3 to 5 years and how do we get there? And it may not happen all at once. It seldomly does in software. But over time, I think the blockchain will have a similar impact like the internet had on the way we do business today.
Right. Good advice. Well, thank you, Richard. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Ken. Looking forward to your next call.
Thank you. Well, that's all we have time for today. And thanks for listening. Please join us for the next Chain Reactions podcast.